what to make of all that happens in season 2 of The Bear from Hulu. We'll get to it on this week's Taking It Down.
An elevator tape projection.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take, where we prompt conversations for thoughtful, busy TV devotees, all from us, your irreverent outsiders. I'm Blaine Duncan, I'm the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take. I always could not help dissecting why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike when it comes to TV, movies, and more. I have an English degree and a side hustle as an English teacher, so I'll try my best to offer insight that you can use for conversation with others, or even with us, or even just to think about. Luckily, my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints on this podcast each week, as with me are the other hosts, Adam Morrow's an erudite traveling and studio musician with a penchant for fine literature. Donovan Reinwald is a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film, television, and more. And Natalie Morrow, she's the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and she's a huge Beyonce fan. From us, you'll get the obvious, but you'll get the obscure. We are here for the TV and streaming obsessed who are just too busy for anything more than the show or movie itself. We'll give the outside of Hollywood analysis, and like a lot of the Alabama Take productions, it'll come with zero Southern stereotype. Alright, happy 4th of July to listeners, if they're with us on the 4th of July. This will be released on the 4th of July. Am I right? Is my calendar, my mental calendar correct there?
It's Tuesday. Tuesday. You're spot on.
Tuesday, 4th of July. Happy whatever day you're, if you celebrate, here we are. I know we've got all sorts of listeners from around the globe. If you're listening from England, the 4th of July is... No, I'm not going to do that. It's a joke. We have an occasional British listener, I think, if I look at my stats correctly.
Do they get deli bars?
We'll figure it out. If I knew any of them by name, you know, I just see the stats and sometimes no. And if you're listening to us, of course, thanks for taking a break from the Juvenile Tiny Desk concert.
We're sure it's been looping.
It's so funny to me.
I was pretty over the Tiny Desk thing, you know?
Oh, me too.
It was cool for a long time.
Mm-hmm. You've played it, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
Easy there, Adam.
Is that when it jumped the shark for you?
Probably. When
I don't want any club that wants me in. You know, I don't want to be a part of it.
That's exactly right. We played it in 2016.
Okay.
That was still like a fun time. I mean, there's obviously like ones that are... I still go back and watch the Wilco ones all the time. And
sure.
I thought you were going to say you really still go back and watch the one you did.
I did. I thought he was going to say that too.
Every night before bed.
Yeah.
And as a pep up in the morning. But the form was... It's just kind of like... We get it, but man, a juvenile one.
It's kind of good.
It's awesome.
It's kind of like, and I don't mean good in a tongue-in-cheek, isn't this cute? We used to dance to Back That Ass Up all the time. You know, that kind of, I'm not saying it in any kind of ironic way. Like,
it's just good.
It's just straight up good. The arrangement for that song is surprisingly like, whoa, he worked on this and it's kind of cool.
And he's got a stack of like incredible New Orleans musicians.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. That's part of it. Anyway, so when I say you're taking a break from it, you may really be. And I legitimately watched a couple of clips. I really should just sit down and watch the whole thing. I'm not sure how many songs he does. Those are usually what, 4 songs long?
3-4 songs, yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of Wilco, our goal today is to unpack the back half of season 2 of The Bear. Really, we should say, speaking of REM, more REM this season than last season. Anyway, The Bear, it's been on Hulu for a couple of weeks now. We have wrapped up our watching of it. We're going to take it from episodes 5 through the end. Don't listen if you haven't watched those episodes. We don't want to spoil anything for you. Just come back or skip to the next segment, which will be about Secret Invasion episode 2, if you've seen it. Or just, you know, catch up and then come back. All right, I'm going to jump in early here. I know it's only July. I'm giving this show the line of the year in television, which is I'm not like this because I'm in Van Halen. I'm in Van Halen because I'm like this.
It's great.
That killed me. I was like, wait, did he? I paused it, backed it up, Googled it to make sure that wasn't like he wasn't quoting a book or some weird movie. You know, apparently that's just straight from the show.
Really?
From Richie. I think that's straight from Richie. I could not find a reference.
I thought it was a quote from somebody. I mean, not that I don't know the source, but I figured he was.
I assumed it was.
Picked up some cultural ephemera, but no.
And the funny thing is you can hear him saying it in the background at the end of the episode to someone totally different. I was like, dude,
right.
That's so Richie.
He knew he had a good one.
Yeah. Which brings me to my point that I think Richie's my character of the season. Really dug watching him on screen.
Could not agree more.
My cousin?
I could agree less.
He kind of annoyed the shit out of me last season.
Go ahead, Natalie. What'd you say?
Well, I just said I could agree less.
Okay, he's still annoying to you, or you just have a couple of favorites beyond him?
I think that not enough has been done. Like, obviously, this is not like a redemption story for him necessarily, but it kind of was framed that way, especially during his episode. I don't think he's done enough yet. He's not earned my respect yet. So,
can we continue giving out superlatives and ask who your character of the season is then?
Marcus.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Solid.
Thank you.
Sweetheart Marcus. Marcus is the kind of guy you'd hang out with.
Yeah. It's like, it's got to be like Marcus or Tina. Those are the top two.
Tina, you might hang out with after you got to know
her.
Oh,
I wouldn't hang out with Tina. I just think she's great. And I like that she calls everybody Jeffrey.
Mm-mm. In real life, you might, though. If these people were real and you worked with Tina, after about 3 months of working with her, you might buddy up with her. But Marcus, you'd give him rides to work. You would have a drink with him or a coffee with him. You would hang with him for sure. I mean, even Carm is a little too neurotic. Plus, he never has time. Cousin would drive you crazy. You wouldn't hang out with him. Sydney, also a little too neurotic. She might get on your nerves a little bit at work, and you might have a little resentment after work. Might not. Loved this season. Let's take it from about episode 6. I kind of have a mental layout here. Just a few things on each episode. If you want to back up or jump forward, please let me know. Episode 6, the big episode. I'm watching episode 6 in bed. A lot of my television watching is done on my iPad these days. Funnily enough, it's not the direction I would have seen myself going, but my little girl is 5 and she wants somebody to be in there with her. She really wants someone to be in there with her all night, but she definitely won't fall asleep unless you're right beside her. So I just flip my iPad open and watch something as she's falling asleep. Have my earbuds in. And I'm watching episode 6, and I'm like, okay, blah, blah, blah. We'll get into the specifics here in a minute. I'm like, how long is this episode? I hit pause, and I'm like, oh, this is an hour. And it's like an hour and a minute. And, of course, we're talking about the episode. It was the Christmas episode, the flashback. You knew immediately it was a flashback. Nice camera choice, nice lens choice to give you that tiny little bit of a grainy look to it. I mean, as soon as it starts, of course... As soon as it starts, you know, because the character Mikey's in the frame.
It also starts by telling you how many weeks before open it is.
Yeah, 252 or something. And if you do the math, that's years.
4.5, 5 years, yeah.
Thank you. Man, that episode felt like a play. There was, I think there was so much improv going on in that episode as far as background. It felt almost like a Curb Your Enthusiasm but way more hectic. Like, it felt like here are the plot points we definitely want to have. Here are the things we absolutely has to end with the mother driving the car through the house. Has to have this, Mikey throwing forks at Uncle Lee. But in the meantime, y'all just go.
Have you read anything about that to know if it...
No, am I accurate? I haven't read
it. No, I don't know. I would be shocked if it...
No, I'm probably not. Right, no.
Well, I was just going to say, a lot of shows that have that many characters, that much stuff going on, but do have those few plot points that have to be hit seem improv, but most of the time they are so strictly scripted because they know they have to hit certain parts. So I feel like this one was so chaotic. It had every single thing had to have been scripted.
Yeah, but the background noise, I think all that was, I don't know, but... Interesting. Episode 6 was... What did you think? I think that's a dividing line. Most people who love The Bear probably liked it a lot. And we three really like this show. So what did you think about episode 6? Did it add enough? Could it have been 30 minutes? What are you thinking?
I really like this show, obviously. It was one of my favorite shows last year, and I'm sure it will be this year as well. I was not impressed by the episode. It felt a bit...
Okay.
It felt a bit like when shows now do like the this is our tracking shot episode or this is our whatever episode. And we're almost, if you are watching us on YouTube, you know we talked Asteroid City. We're almost getting to like the form overtakes the story a little bit on this one to me. It just felt a bit like they thought that they had this treasure trove of information that they were going to give us. That's like, this is an episode where the fans are going to say, finally, we get to see, we've only seen like the remnants of the family or the family like picking up the pieces or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This is the family in full flight, full chaotic flight. They're going to love it. Or that's going to answer a bunch of questions or something. And it just, it felt like I was checking my phone and kind of bored by the episode.
Yeah, I think for the most part, I agree with that. And I don't really even think, you know, Adam and I kind of talked about this after we were watching it. It didn't really give you that insight into. I think it did justice for Natalie's character. Like, I think it kind of showed a lot about why she is the way that she is. But for everybody else, it's like we kind of already get it that these are some messed up folks with a lot of trauma. So I don't think it was necessary for it. It could have been a 30-minute episode.
Right. That's where I'm in agreement with you guys. I think it could have been about 35 or 40 minutes, and it would have been just as good. But you also got the feeling that they said, goodness, we have this many great actors. We've got to just let them go. And they did. I thought this episode was about the acting, not so much the plot. Like Adam said, you kind of knew most of this, or you could have imagined it. One thing I did think a few things I think it did show me a ton, which might be important. It was so impressive to me that Carm's dynamic was very different in this episode. Like, he felt like the stepped-on little brother. And if you can go back to the first couple of episodes when he first busts into the restaurant, he's in charge, he's yelling, do this, call me chef. And he was not like that in this episode. It's like he's overshadowed and a little nervous and baby brother. Richie is incredibly different. He seems chill and kind and, you know, relatively normal in comparison to the rest of them. Bob Odenkirk is kind of a mean-ass uncle. I like that. And here's the thing that is most impressive, or at least making me think about this episode the most. John Bernthal's playing an addict, and you never see him take anything or drink anything or... Well, he drinks a beer, but you never see him, like, in the bathroom staring at the mirror and with a line of coke in front of him like, oh, I'm not... Can I do this? It's just... It's almost implied, of course, but Uncle Lee calls him out. You know, what are you on? I thought it was a pretty good episode, though. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis was insane.
Did you ever think all the, like, guest stars this season was distracting?
I can see. I think that's a valid point. They weren't for me. I think this episode knew that, and that's why it's an hour long, so maybe. But Olivia Colman in the next episode or two was just more of a treat. It was more like, oh, she's going to be on screen for 4 minutes, and she's going to tell this amazing little story that she doesn't even finish, but she is kind of finished for you. I can see that as an argument, for sure.
She was the one that worked the best for me, whereas the family episode was just a little too much. And I agree, your rundown of, you know, like you're catching Carm when he has gone into the world and proven himself, but comes back and realizes it doesn't matter here, you know?
He's a low man on a totem pole. And Natalie pointed out Sugar already being so vulnerable here.
Right.
And you still see a little of that when she's running when she's COO of the restaurant, but you really don't know why or see the background of it.
But Richie, I mean, he's slightly less crusty, I guess, than he was in season one about life, but he's still like wheeling and dealing and lying to his wife about the job and all of that stuff. And you see,
well, this is probably the breaking point for him. Yeah. You know, he asked for the job. He doesn't get it, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, and that might be the point where he becomes the shit heel.
Yeah, possibly.
And then it brings to light more about him in episode 7, which our Natalie has pointed out is supposed to be his redemption in a way. It's Cousin's episode at the Olivia Coleman restaurant. She's Chef Terry. We don't know who Chef Terry is for the longest. We find out that the young man in Copenhagen training Marcus, she's worked with him, though. And the bear does this thing where it's like, we're going to drop this piece of information. You're going to get lost or not even think about it. And then we'll bring it up later. And, you know, your message board reading will pay off or whatever. Here, it's where the young man in Copenhagen training Marcus was talking about he was the best chef ever. And I was always by his side. It turns out he was talking about Carm.
That felt pretty obvious, right, at the time?
It felt obvious, but I just wasn't thinking when I was watching it. I was just watching him and Marcus and not really trying to, you know, unpack anything at the time. But then when you see the picture together, you think, oh, okay, that's probably who he was talking about.
Right.
What's that actor's name? I forget. He plays Adam Warlock in the new Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm forgetting his name.
I just know him from
Where
the Millers, and you see his peep.
Yeah. It's so funny that everyone's seen We're the Millers.
It's on TNT all the time.
Who would have ever thought that would have been a very well-known movie?
Not by choice.
So Natalie was making an assertion that wasn't enough to make Richie do the turn where he comes back in episode 8 and is wearing the suit and is a little nicer and is more structured. Adam, was it for you?
This was my favorite of the personal sagas, personal journeys.
Mine too.
I don't know why. I mean, they're all sent out almost on like a, you're going to find courage, you're going to find a heart, you're going to blah, blah, blah. And his thing of going from bitter and disillusioned with everything to basically just learning how to give a shit was really cool. I mean, I how often is that portrayed like that in TV? Not that he usually is more fantastical than that. You know what I mean? Like, you see a lot of people like have the courage, like Marcus kind of grows into like, now I'm a confident chef. You know, you see a lot of those kind of hero journeys. This was redemption in such a existential, nuanced kind of way, you know, where he doesn't, the purpose that he finds is just as like a cog in the wheel. And he learns to take pride again and learns all these things that, and a lesser show almost couldn't tell that story. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Much as Mikey, John Bernthal's character, hovers as a ghost over the entire series, this episode to me had Richie's daughter.
Yeah.
Never really mentioned, but kind of hovering. Like when he read Every Second Counts, to me, I immediately thought, oh, he's reading that as a dad. I've got to be a better person for my kid and my ex-wife. He does make the phone call to invite her to Taylor Swift, and she refuses. What a sad moment.
It's pretty terrible.
Who turns down Taylor Swift tickets?
Him.
Just change it barely, Natalie. Who turns down Beyonce tickets? You know, it'd be almost similar.
Who bought Beyonce tickets last night? Well, it was me.
It's a comparable it's a comparable situation. By the way, going way back, we could have said this last week, but when he tells his little girl, "Hey, Daddy loves you. I just need a break from Taylor Swift." Guys, that's every dad in America. for me, my girl's getting really big into Taylor Swift right now.
Yep. Then he drives home after work one night, absolutely screaming along to the Romeo and Juliet song.
Love Story?
Yeah.
See, I knew the name.
That's an old one.
It was such a sweet moment. It's sweet.
It was.
It's really, it's something that Natalie brought up, that it's kind of a redemption, but maybe, you know, did he earn it kind of thing? Because when I was watching the very next episode, I thought to myself, I don't know if he had enough time.
It was 7 days.
Yeah. I mean, maybe all he needed for everything to click was, hey, Carm and other people are pulling for you.
Yeah.
You know, we know you're a bit of a shitheel, but we want you to do great. And just because you've made a couple of mistakes doesn't mean they're trying to kick you to the curb. Maybe that's all he needed to hear.
Yeah, it was 7 days in like a almost boot camp kind of environment of these super long days doing menial tasks over and over again until they suddenly had value to them. I'm willing to buy that as a profound experience. Plus, this guy's probably been doing the same thing for how many years? Like any interruption in his day-to-day.
However many you said, 4 years, 4 or 5.
Yeah. He strikes me as like one step removed from working at Patty's Pub. You know?
Oh, my God. Oh, he could be a Patty's Pub.
Yeah.
Regular.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like, you find out, much like Charlie, that he's never left Philadelphia, or Chicago in this case.
I could see it. Easily. But when I was watching it, I thought, yeah, maybe if I'm in the writer's room, I'm thinking one more episode before he becomes a little more dedicated or...
I feel like they should have written in a couple more mistakes. Like that, yeah. The episode in between his and then the last, it's like he came out perfect. And this was clearly the most imperfect person on the show. Like he should have made some mistakes. And then the last episode, when they needed him to step up, he steps up and accomplishes it. Sure, would have bought it. But not just straight out the gate, got his shit together.
Yeah.
To me, though, I see some of the stuff that he did, like when he is doing the interviews and he turns the napkin, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How could they not know it? Like, there was a bit of, like, yeah, that was clever, but it's also kind of overcompensation on his part of now going to such a high degree on all of this that, to me, it was played as, like, a person who's faking it until they make it on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, going through the motions on what they witnessed and hoping that they can rise to that over time. And
doing
it
big, and doing it a little too big.
Right. Right. And it'll probably settle back. That pendulum swung a long way. And it may not go all the way back to, Blaine, you keep calling him a shitheel. May not go all the way back to that, but maybe it'll settle somewhere in the middle. And Carmi did, you know, he started at the, not to go all the way to the final scene, but he started yelling at him and then he screamed, "I love you." And Carmi's yelling all these terrible things back. And by the end, he's like, "I hope you freeze to death," and walks away. So it's
and
not
he does
like,
the ultimate injustice and calls him his mom.
Yeah.
Who's really messed up. Yeah, he calls him Donna. Yeah, we'll move on down to the last three episodes. Episode 8, one thing I wrote was that I am so happy. This whole season, I've been very thrilled that Oliver Platt's role as Uncle Jimmy, Uncle Jack, is that he's been a little bit more expanded, just so we see him at least once an episode.
Mm-hmm.
He has these line deliveries that's a blend of mafia-like gravitas, but at the same time, whimsy and love.
Yeah.
I think he's a really good addition. And when he says to Carm, "I don't want to take the place from you, but I'll take the place from you." You know, right. It's just like, damn, I felt that.
Yeah. That was a good moment.
Episode 8 kind of ended with a big win with the gas balloon. And I thought that was nice to do that in episode 8 rather than try to wait for episode 10 to have their big win. That would have been too much like last season when they found the money in the last 15 minutes.
I was also curious how they were going to get the narrative to a place that left another season open, but also they kept hitting all their goals. Like, how do you... Mm-hmm. how do you have a successful open that opens more questions?
Mm-hmm.
And they totally did it. And the way that they mm-hmm. pasted out for that test to be the central part of 8, and then 9 to be about prepping for open, you know, 9 and 10 being on the same day was really good, I thought.
You messaged me if I'd watched, how many episodes I'd watched, and I was like, I went ahead and watched them all. And now you see why, because 9 and 10 are just, it's like they could have been one episode if you
totally
have another long, yeah. Episode 10, let's jump right into this last one. Being trapped in a cold box is a very apt visual metaphor for Carm, right? I am trapped in a box of cold. Outside is the triumph that I have helped make, and inside is me being cold and wondering what I've done. I mean, that's just like a nice little visual metaphor of him being trapped in his own head, or trapped by grief, or, you know, hindered by being emotionally unavailable sometimes.
And he goes right back to, he uses the definition of fun or whatever it was that they talked about early in the season.
Oh, what was it?
It's like, I don't provide entertainment or whatever it was. Like, he's clearly been thinking about, why am I a miserable person? How do I fit into society at large?
Another one of my favorite moments of the entire season is the reaction of Sydney to Josh smoking crack in the alley. You know, Marcus comes and tells her the guy's smoking crack, and her reaction shot is so good. She's a funny actress anyway, and an incredible writer from what I understand. And just another example of all the actors just doing amazing stuff would be Oliver Platt is only allowed like 4 seconds of reaction time to a chocolate-covered banana, but it really, you know, gave me a little heartwarming moment. And all they did was lay a banana in front of him, and he reacted to that. And it's just very good. Of course, it was built upon from episode 6, but I don't know. It's played well.
He's an Arrested Development guy. That's why that hit. Just a Bluth banana laid out there got to him.
Maybe. They did a cool little thing as far as the form of the show. The long shots, the long, at least seeming one shots, for the smoothness of how the night's kind of going, and then the quick choppy edits for Carm getting trapped in the freezer and things start to unravel. I thought those were nice ideas.
The sound design between front of house and back of house was also really nice. The way that you could feel that door open, you know, both the visual and especially the audio, where it goes from this kind of like sterile chaos to front of house where it's, there's people here having a good time. Feels good. Yet always with that sleek window between them.
Yeah, that was a sleek window. Having Claire speak the voicemail rather than you just hear it from his phone gives you that moment where when he drops the phone at the end of the voicemail, and it really felt like he was dropping her. You know what I mean? It was just a nice visual. Rather than him, you know, holding it and then all you do is see him hold it and then drop it, it's a switch from her speaking it to him dropping it. It was, I don't know, I just noticed tiny things like that that were visually striking. Lots of heartbreak among Victory there, and I think the saddest of them all, and it was so short, but Marcus's mother probably died that night, right? Or at least something bad happened.
Sure seems that way.
Because when it said mom's nurse, it took me a full couple of seconds to think, mom's nurse? Who's mom? And then I thought, oh yeah, that was the opening scene of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, that was tough.
Give me your opinion on Sydney. Is she becoming a little less likable? Is that understandable? Is she too pushy? Does she deserve to be?
I think she's doing the job that she has to do. I don't see that as being pushy. I see that as being assertive and taking leadership in a space that needs that kind of leadership.
Mm-hmm. You can read it as being jealous of Claire.
Don't at all.
No. You didn't? Okay. That's what I was wondering. She's definitely more likable with her dad, the character of Sydney. She's more vulnerable.
Well, isn't everybody?
And I think,
for the most part, other than maybe the other family, but you're typically different around your family than you are in person, whether that means you have to be more protective of yourself or you can be, that's your safe place.
They have a very sweet relationship with very little screen time together. I think that's great.
Them being the opposite of the Bear family, you know, not both in number and in timbre of relationship, is pretty interesting. I mean, I guess it's an easy writing device, but it's just the unconditional support, and he mostly cares about her well-being. You know, like early on in the season, it's like, why don't you just, you know, good steady job is not a bad thing.
You ever heard that line, Adam?
I mean, he's not wrong.
Man, the Coach K thing, we got to bring it up. That book was referenced way more than I would have imagined. Are you going to go read that book now?
I mean, it was partially funny because these are decidedly not sports people for the most part.
At least not Sydney.
Right, Sydney definitely not. And don't really get the feeling that Carmi cares all that much.
Right.
Like he has like a passing knowledge probably.
Yeah.
But for her to not only, and she's like watching clips at different points on her phone.
Toward the end, she's watching the Duke comeback that was referenced a couple times.
She's all
it made
that.
Me want to go watch that again.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen it since it happened.
I feel like this season was not unlike the Beatles doc. And that, like, when you watch this, you can see you have been each of these people. It's in different times in your life.
Uh-huh.
You asked, was she likable?
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of the Paul of this situation of, like, there's maybe some people resent her. Maybe she feels like a busybody or neurotic or whatever, but she's just trying to keep everything together. Like, any time that she seems to annoy Carmi, it's because he's aloof more than she's annoying.
Or he's in love.
Yeah, but yes. But surely it could be better handled. What are you shaking your head about, Matt?
Because being in love is not an excuse to drop your responsibilities. Like, take care of your shit.
Hear, hear.
I think that they use this season to, you know, Blaine, early on you said, Carmi comes in, season one, here's the level of professionalism that we need, I'm in control, blah, blah, blah. They use this season to pull him closer to his brother and Richie and say, like, ultimately, you are still one of these dudes. You know, you're not, but you still have the same potential shortcomings.
Mm-hmm. The show did a good job of balancing. You could go 50-50. You could say, he's in love, he deserves it. He's been, season one was a train wreck mentally for him because he's so focused and neurotic again. And then the other 50% could say, what Natalie just said, no, you got responsibilities. You are in this job to get a star. You promised Sydney all this. You are in it money-wise with Uncle Jimmy. Get this shit done.
You get all these people depending
on you. You got all these people depending on you. You may not have time for a relationship. You can just tell her, look, I'll see you in 2 weeks. I'm sorry.
It doesn't have to be one or the other, though. It could be both.
That's true.
Like, granted, we're not dealing with like a well-centered human. But most people can juggle two things, and they can have a conversation and say, hey, I'm going to be busy for the next couple of weeks. Uh-huh. Be back.
Exactly. I kept wanting that conversation to happen, especially when they were standing there in his kitchen and she comes out wearing his T-shirt. I thought surely he was going to say, yeah, you know, you may not see me for about 3 weeks and I'm sorry. I just kept thinking that would happen, but of course, he's not the kind of person to recognize that, and we wouldn't have a TV show.
But she's also a doctor, so she would get it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. She's an emergency room doctor. Exactly.
They chose that on purpose. This is...
Oh, yeah.
Like should attract like here. Like, they should understand the chaos. Natalie, I almost asked you after we finished 10, but I wanted to save it for here. You, at least in our little circle, famously don't like Curb because you think... No one would actually say all these things out loud, you know, like the joke, every joke is based on
miscommunication,
him taking it one step too far, saying the thing in his head. Does this show not bother you too? Because all of the emotional, it's like the dramatic version of that, you know, like all the conflict is because they say the one thing that we all think but then tell ourselves, you know what, I'm just not going to say that. And if I'm still mad about it in 5 minutes, maybe I'll say it then. And they just let it fly all the time.
This show at least builds characters that you know are experienced or have experienced a lot of trauma. So there is some reason, and you are invested in that reason. And so you're kind of along the ride with them. Curb, it's just Larry David being an asshole and overreacting. And then the real problem with Curb is that you have this character who just does these terrible things, and then other people react to him in the exact same way, which is not how humans work. There's not just a crowd of Larry Davids responding to each other.
You don't think Larry David is like a flawed, has some trauma that made him the way that he is?
Of course there is, but that's not part of the story. There's no reason for me to care about that other than this guy just seems so entitled to sharing his opinion.
He's got a little rich white privilege happening. He's Jewish, but you know, the idea is there.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that because you know all of the drama of the big Christmas dinner was that everybody had to say exactly what they were thinking the whole time, and I realized that I don't want to speak for both of y'all. Natalie comes from a large Italian family, so. Mm-hmm. Or at least on one side. So maybe this wouldn't have been true if you had grown up more around them. But like, you know, most just good old Southerners, we're just going to be polite through dinner. Just get through it. You know,
Sugar would fit right in the Southern family. She tamped it down. She just sat there looking worried.
Yeah.
And you I
just say,
to her,
man, I can't wait to get out of here. Yeah. Instead of like having to declare everything.
I do want you to make some last comments on Donna, the mom, Jamie Lee Curtis. Not necessarily her performance. I think we'd all agree it was something. It's crazy. But what do you think of the character of Donna?
Natalie's laughing because I didn't like the character and I didn't really like the performance.
Oh. See, I thought she played crazy. Like in a real... like she played to me a version of crazy where you can't really get her... hospitalized, but at the same time she probably needs to be. She's right there on the precipice.
I mean, I know that these people exist, but it was just kind of hard to watch.
She was also playing an alcoholic, just straight up alcoholic, which is that too fits. So maybe she's not legitimately crazy insane, but she was alcoholic 100%.
Right.
And that you can see in some households, you know, if you know where to look. No comments on Donna, though? Natalie, did you find her more realistic than Adam or something?
In some ways. Like, I've definitely seen, like, the, you know, I'm going to overburden myself and then get really upset when nobody's helping. Like, that kind of, like, gaslighting in families that happens at the holidays.
Always at Christmas, too. Yes,
and
yes,
I'll go back to, you know, I think the... most important thing that episode did was to show the any show or movie where there is like mother-daughter trauma, I think is really effective if you are a mother or a daughter or have one of the others. Sorry, guys, but it's different. Mm-hmm. Like mother-daughter trauma is weird. But everything else, I think
that
it was
reminds
a bit much.
Me of me always doing the dad thing, dad daughter thing. I always bring that up. So yeah, jump in here with this perspective.
I mean,
mother-daughter.
I don't know that you can explain it unless you are in a mother-daughter relationship. Whether you've had trauma or not, you still are aware of the potential of it. And it's really easy to see, like, oh, I could push that button and it could get really bad really fast, but I'm not going to. But if you're dealing with somebody who's going to, it could get really bad really fast.
Great insight. The Bear season 2, I mean, we got... a nice 38 minutes out of it, or however many. Here's what we're going to do. That's going to be the end of our show this week. If you're an audio listener, if you are a YouTube video person, or if you're curious where this conversation goes, go to the Alabama Takes YouTube channel. Go ahead and subscribe to it. And what you can do is watch the video version of this, where we're going to talk about the second episode of Secret Invasion. Thanks for listening, though, if you're an audio listener. In a podcast app. You are awesome, and we'll talk to you next week.